Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who has been knocked off of multiple boats by multiple power sanders. It's John Levingood.
Dude, those were clearly big sanders because I'm not a small guy.
I do have a theory about this movie. There's several scenes in this film, Captain Ron, where the sister pushes the brother, and he flies a good 40 feet into the water. That's an exaggeration. But then that power sander hits Martin Short, who is not that big of a guy, but the power sander hits him, and it jettisons him off of the boat. I mean, dude, he goes flying a good 10 feet.
You would imagine that, like, that broke some ribs or something.
Yeah, his ribs are jelly. So this power sander, like, let's say you're a little, you know, the boat's rocking, right? You're leaning back, and that power sander that catapulted Martin Short's character, Martin, which is his name, like 20 feet into the water. If that hits you and you're off balance, John, you're going to be going over.
I guess so, man. But, man, like, when that hit him, I really thought like an ogre, like a cave troll, hit like some dude in the chest in Lord of the Rings. Like, I thought that was it for him. I thought the movie was about to end.
Yeah, I mean, that movie could have – and then he got a ladder dropped on his head. So he had broken ribs and a concussion.
He took some abuse.
By this power sander, man.
And while he didn't almost drown, he and his wife were like, I don't know, another 10 minutes from potentially drowning in their shower.
Oh, like, yeah, you're right.
A lot of potential malady struck them.
This was a dangerous thing. You had gorillas, pirates.
They were trying to navigate in a violent storm with neither a map nor a compass.
That both blew away, luckily.
I mean, they had a rough time.
Now, John, since it's our 175th episode, big deal, you know, our big Kurt Russell spectacular for our episode, I'm going to put you on the spot here, and I am going to give you a Captain Ron quiz.
Okay, I'm willing to try.
Are you ready for this?
I'm gonna do my best. I've seen the movie a lot of times in my life, so I feel prepared.
Here we go. What did Captain Ron say his name was? Ron Shapiro, Ronald McDonald, Ron Rico. There it is. Which of these was not a pet name used by Captain Ron for the family members? Sweetie, Boss, Kitty, Swab.
Sweetie.
What did Captain Ron say they would do if they got lost?
Just pull off and ask directions.
There it is. Where did Captain Ron say he'd never been before? Magic Mountain, Dolly World, Disney World, Six Flags.
Disney World.
What was Martin supposed to be careful of in the woods? Cannibals, lions, tigers, gorillas.
Oh, okay. I thought there was going to be a question of pronunciation here. Gorillas.
When Ben, Caroline, and Captain Ron were playing Monopoly, which piece was Captain Ron? Hat, cannon, shoe, battleship.
I don't remember. I'm just going to guess battleship.
All right. After having their boat stolen by the pirates, where did the family's dinghy take them?
By accident?
Yep. Mexico, Florida, Cuba, or out to sea.
Oh, the raft.
Yep, the dinghy.
Cuba.
All right. What did the Harveys find in Cuba? Their boat, a restaurant, a hotel, Fidel Castro?
Their boat.
How did Captain Ron tell Ben he lost his eye? Bar fight, nail gun, car accident, shark attack?
He actually gives two answers. He says shark attack, and I think the second one might have been bar fight, but the first one was shark attack.
All right. What rank is given to Ben at the end of the movie?
Mate.
All right. I'm going to submit your answers.
Wait, is this actually online somewhere?
Yep.
I thought you made this up.
I just found this online doing all my research. You scored a perfect 10 out of 10. You scored 150 points. And the average score for this quiz is 8 out of 10. So
nice.
You are above average in your Captain Ron knowledge, John.
So I'm curious, though. Did the person who made the quiz think that he only gave one answer for how he lost his eye, or was that the answer that he gave to Ben and the other time he was just mumbling to himself walking away? Because he actually says two different ways that he lost his eye.
Yeah, I don't remember the second time. All I remember is shark attack, because I don't want to believe another answer.
Yeah, so when he gave the second answer, I started to pay attention to see if he gave yet other answers, and it was just two answers. God, I wonder if I wrote it down in my notes. No, I didn't write it down. Rat. The funny thing is I had it written down, and then I deleted it. And this is frustrating. But yeah, he gives two answers.
Ooh, that adds some.
So the first time.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the first time. What happens?
Yeah, the, The first time it's when he's talking to Ben.
Yeah.
But then later in the movie, like 20 or 30 minutes later in the movie, he references something like a bar fight. Maybe I'm just saying that because it was one of their answers. But no, he really gives two answers, and it made me think, like, just how dodgy is this guy? it's one thing if he's lying about a shark attack, but is he telling multiple lies? Or was the first one a lie, and the second one they caught him off guard and he was being candid?
Are his lies going on top of other lies?
The other thing is, I sit and wonder, like, are almost all these lies, or is his life so interesting, but he's so generally humble that he doesn't realize how grandiose it sounds?
Well, here's what we know about Ron. I wrote down every note of what we can learn about Ron, and let's dissect this. And we also have some questions to get to. He says his name is Ron Rico.
Right.
Right. We never learn, is it Ronald? Is it L. Ron? Is it Ron? You know, is it Hank Stevens? But he calls himself Ron Rico. We just hear Ron Rico. Now, he doesn't know where the Great Barrier Reef is. He doesn't know what it is.
He doesn't know what it is. He knows where it is, allegedly.
Allegedly. So he didn't know what it was, but apparently they hit it in Australia. He also lost his eye to a shark attack. He has been to rehab. We know that. He said that he has been to rehab. I got his age down to about 42. And then I researched, he said he was on the Saratoga. I researched the Saratoga, and that was in commission in the 60s, 70s, 80s. So the age works for him to have actually have steered the Saratoga. Next.
Okay.
He said he won the glass eye in a craps game. He speaks in third person quite menacingly. He charges $2.50 for beer. Doesn't navigate. He doesn't like to navigate. People get jealous of him because maybe he was in the Navy. He likes hanging out with the kids. You could tell that he enjoys hanging out with the two Martin Short kids. He knows how to steal cars. He works. He's a pretty good teacher. They learn how to operate the boat. Next, he plays strip Monopoly with children. He hasn't been in the United States for 7 years. He is capable of disappearing, and he has never been to Disney World. That's what we know about Captain Ron.
Well, that 7 years for not going to Disneyland, that's a statute of limitations right there.
That's kind of crazy, right? He hasn't been in the States for 7 years because of something illegal. Now, do you believe any of this, John? I read a review where they said he made everyone believe that he's a huckster, but he makes everyone believe it. But he obviously knows what he's doing, right?
I think so. But I feel like, I mean, he's a huckster, but I don't think he's trying to cause anyone any harm. He doesn't want to, you know, he's as innocent about it as one can be. Like, I'll bet the reason, whatever statute of limitations he's avoiding, is almost like accidentally getting in a bad situation with the wrong people. I mean, when he plays strip poker or strip Monopoly with kids, he's playing with a prostitute.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't think that he realizes what's wrong with all this stuff. His behavior resulted in Ben having a beer bottle in like 8 different scenes in this movie.
Yeah. And then also, he said they got lost, but they randomly go to the island where he sees Clarice. Hey, Clarice!
That's how I knew we were here, but when I saw Clarice.
You know, boss, she likes to take my manhood whenever I'm around. So did he go to that island on purpose and say they got lost?
Oh, that's a good question. Like, he just wanted to stop for a little romantic pit stop.
And then did he stop at that one island because he wanted a double chili dog and a bacon bonzo burger?
I don't know, but he sure had a nice outfit for dancing by that little plane bar and grill.
He's got some moves. He gets the party started. He's basically a Black Eyed Peas song when they show up on the first island when he parks his boat like the Saratoga. He gets everybody dancing, and he drinks a margarita.
When he parks that, no matter how many times I've seen that movie, like, I kind of, like, get thrilled when I know it's coming. It's such a fun scene. And, like, that's back in a time when, like, when you watch those movies from, like, the 80s and 90s, these, like, hard, gritty cop movies where someone, like, parks a car like that, you usually, like, roll your eyes at it, you know? And when I see Ron Rico do that, I'm like, yeah! Like, I don't know, I'm on his side.
Because that adds some layers to him, because he can park this boat knowing exactly what he's doing perfectly. So
he knows
what's going on. Yeah, Dom Toretto would be jealous.
Yeah.
Like, he knows what he's doing, so it adds a layer to him. Also, I love the line in this movie where they go through the storm, and he's like, I know we're near land. And Martin Short's like, why? He's like, because we're out of gas. He's like, what does that mean? He's like, well, we're so far, like, whenever we get there, we're normally out of gas. Like that.
Yeah, when we left, we had just enough gas to get to San Juan.
And he gets there, they get there perfectly. So he
knows.
So he knows what's going on with, he's a captain, for sure.
Yeah, he has a few misfires that never totally take them into left field, it seems.
Yeah. So maybe he is kind of being squirrely with him a little bit, but he's not asking for any extra money or anything. And
no.
And he seems to enjoy hanging out with the family.
Yeah. He even, you know, and for all he frustrates Martin, like, I think he likes Martin. He just has less to relate with Martin because Martin tends to play the upper class superior and everyone else is just being more sincere. But I mean, I think he's trying. He, you know, he caters to when they're first down by the at the engine when they first get on the boat. You know, Martin is like pretending that he knows something about these engines to his wife. Like they all take all that oil, dear. And he's like, but that he said it right after Ron says it. And he, you know, but Ron just like nods, he goes with it. He lets him play that instead of rolling his eyes at it. Like he seems to not want to be on everyone's good side. He just seems to, everyone is already on his good side and he's just reflecting that back.
Ooh.
You know, he seems very, very happy with it's seemingly anybody.
Now, I got to ask you something, John. If you're an uptight person from Chicago, right, you have a second mortgage on your home, you seem to be needing money, and your daughter just got engaged to a guy who seems pretty friendly when he looks at him and says, yo, mom and dad, they, you know, I mean, he seems to Caroline, she gets engaged. You know, there's a lot of stress at home that he has to travel to downtown Chicago from the suburbs. So his commute is probably insane. So these guys are probably always busy. He's pretty uptight. So he goes and gets on this boat and he just immediately starts disliking Captain Ron. If you were in that place, John, would you like Captain Ron? Would you be a fan of his or would you want him gone?
Gosh, I don't know. You know, if I'm putting myself in that place. Well, honestly, you know, even just reality, John, you know, real me, if someone seems kind of that haphazard and, you know, well, clearly unprofessional.
Yeah.
Right. Regardless of what he knows, he's clearly unprofessional with his clientele. Like, I don't think I'd be too fond of that, but I don't know. I guess it kind of depends. That early on, I'd be feeling him out though. You know, I'd be like, well, maybe this will be fun. I'd like to say, but I'm also not $250,000 in debt.
Yeah. I mean, in this movie, she randomly throws out, oh yeah, we can pay off the second on the house. And
right.
So at the end, when they turn around to take their boat away, I'm like, this is not going to end financially well for you. You're losing your clients. Martin Short might not have his job and you have a second mortgage on your home.
I was like, a little curious about how long they were gone. In the beginning, didn't they say something like,
30 days?
Did he say, right. I thought he said like 40 days or 45 days or something. It seemed like a long time. I'm like, what job do you have that earned you so much money that you're dressed this nicely, you have this nice big house, that you can suddenly disappear? Like, even if you're a partner in a law firm, you don't disappear for over a month like that.
And like, what's
he do?
And your wife, his wife, Catherine, she's on the phone with someone she worked, I assume she's an architect. But the client she's working with only has 510 square feet to work with. So she needs her clients, and she's disappearing for 40 days. Are these kids repeating school? Is it? Because they said, we'll take them out of school. They didn't even say, hey, this could have been taken care of if they say, hey, it's summer. Normally we go to the Hamptons, but we are going to go to this now for the summer, right?
Yeah, no, that was curious too. A lot of things were a little fuzzy, and you just kind of wave your hand at them because they say it so quickly and then they keep going. But yeah, a lot of things are, I don't think it was meant to be so shady sounding when we really start thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think that the writers were just trying to shotgun relate to as many people as possible. You know, like we like showing, you ever notice how movies love showing people like who clearly have upper class houses but who act like they have middle-class regular problems.
Yeah, I mean, they had a very large home in the suburbs of Chicago.
Dude, it was like meeting the McAllisters.
Yeah, very large home. And then he goes into his attic, which is another house unto itself.
Right.
I mean, this is an immaculate home that they have. So, yeah, it's interesting. And then they have a second mortgage on it, John.
But I mean, the whole opening, though, did remind me so much of Home Alone, minus the financial issues, right?
Yeah.
Like, because they have this huge house, but they really seem like everyday folks. Not that everyday folks can't have big houses. That's not what I mean. But, you know, but like, they don't act like they have power jobs when they're at home. The family dynamic doesn't sound like they have private kids in private school or power jobs or house servants or anything, even though they live in McMansions. And then the family dynamic seems very everyday and very quirky. We get to see the spouse interactions, the parent-child interactions, the child-child interactions all real quickly. And then we just dump in some financial problems so that we can move the plot along for some reason. That wasn't necessary.
No. And then that child, Ben, immediately spills milk on his mom's work and costs her 2 weeks worth of progress.
So was that like a $500,000 condo in the Loop in Chicago, and then she just disappeared?
Yeah. I mean, just the kid, that kid is trouble. He just spilled milk. And then the daughter comes home. Now, I have a question, John. The daughter, Caroline, her new fiance, he didn't seem totally bad. He seemed open to, hey, mom and dad. Like, he seemed excited. He didn't show any properties of being a bad dude, did he?
They just gave him a leather jacket and a haircut that a random parent would just want to call a punk without knowing them, you know?
How old is this daughter?
I think that she's 16.
16?
And I think that dude was much older than that.
Jeez, she's an unsupervised child. So he must have a massive commute. And then she's so busy as a freelance architect that they're just never home. Because that kid does come home and fixes his own kind of snack after school. He's used to taking care of himself.
Well, I mean, if you live in the suburbs and you work in downtown Chicago, which it looked like, or some, you know, heavily developed area of Chicago, I'm sure he's commuting an hour each way. And people with jobs like that usually have a 1 hour lunch job. So you're spending 9 total hours at work. That's 11 hours of your day. Yep. You're gone from like 7 to 7 or 6 to 6, right? And that's if it's only an hour commute.
And if his boss was the guy from Office Space, Martin Short is definitely staying at the office another hour or two because he won't say no.
Or if it's Kevin Spacey from Horrible Bosses.
Yeah, exactly. Martin Short's character is not saying no. Martin is not saying no.
Right. He doesn't seem like that guy.
And he also seems like the guy that will get pushed out of the way and then he doesn't get the train, so he has to wait 15 minutes more.
Aw, I feel badly for this hypothetical Martin now.
This family's in a lot of trouble, John.
Well,
no, I'm joking. It's just a 90s family in the suburbs, you know, like this, the kids who kind of take care of themselves.
Yeah, but you know what, though? For all this opening, though, well, minus the second loan, if we just delete the second loan, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
And the fact that his daughter just got engaged to what I think is an 18-year-old, which any father would hate. Their 16-year-old getting engaged to an 18-year-old. But like that aside, when we meet them and we see their dynamics, I don't know, it felt very relatable to me. I liked the way that they spun the web of this family. Like, I immediately kind of liked this family.
Yeah, I like the kid. I like Suave a lot. I thought he was a cool little kid. The sister wasn't bad. I mean, she got taken away during school from her fiancé to go clean a boat for 30 days. She's not going to be happy.
Well, she was trying to hit on every guy who didn't have a scar on his face when they were traveling. Like,
she's like, I'm engaged. It's not really a thing.
It's not like as in not a problem. It's like, come on, dude.
Now, when we first meet Ron, so Martin Short calls up this guy. Hey, this boat we're going to sell you hasn't been appraised since 67. They learn it's not in good shape. So the guy cancels their good captain and gives them Captain Ron. And right. Ron shows up in a car that sinks almost immediately. Ron just doesn't care about putting it in park or, you know, pulling the emergency brake. But this Frenchman shows up with a gun and he says, you already stole my wife.
Right.
You're not going to steal my car. Now, Kurt Russell said, I borrowed this car from a friend. So did he run into a situation, steal that? Did he steal that car or was that guy his friend?
Well, because of the timing of it, I think that morning he woke up with that guy's wife and scrambled to get out of the house as he was maybe coming home from some night shift or something and needed to get the hell out and ended up taking the car. Like, because otherwise, how would the timing work that he borrowed a car from one guy, or you were not borrowing a car from the guy, and he's just finding out you're cheating on it. His wife is cheating on him with you. You know, like that doesn't happen. So I think that he woke up there, whether or not he knew that she was married. I think he woke up there, panicked, realized, you know, had a page or something, and realized he needed to get somewhere for work, and he doesn't have a car, and so he borrowed the car.
Got it. She might have given him the keys.
He even implied that he borrowed his friend's car. You know, like there's the mindset, like, we can't just leave now. I borrowed my friend's car. And then he stops his thought. Like, was he going to call someone?
Were they going to come get that car?
Or, like, he seemed like they weren't going to leave right away. And then all of a sudden he's like, oh okay.
I love
guess
when
we're going.
I love when he looks at the boat, looks at the sky, and he goes,
and within... I think it was like 7 or 8 minutes of running time, because I was keeping track as I was hearing him just unload this stuff. He let Martin know that – well, I'm sorry. Well, he let the kids know anyway that he misplaced a car. And then he let him know that he sunk a boat that wasn't his on the Barrier Reef. He let him know that he was in rehab for something he doesn't reveal. And we know that someone tried to kill him for adultery. And all this happens within the first – 8 minutes that he shares the screen with Martin Short. So at that point, though, you see, if that's me in real life, John is going to be like, wait, no. You seem nice, but I don't know enough about it. This seems a little dodgy to me. Like, and you're telling me this. Like, then, what are the things that I'm not hearing is what I would start thinking.
And I love, too, when he's like, a diesel loved their oil like a sailor loves his rum. And then Martin Short goes, why is that, Captain Ron? He goes, I don't know. and then they kick the tires, light the fires, and then turpentine gets all over, or smoke gets all over Caroline.
And he's like, a little turpentine will take that out.
And then he goes, you stole my wife. You are not stealing my car. That's the line that the guy says. So you stole my wife. You are not stealing my car. So it's quite
an introduction to Ron Rico.
And then he passes out and they think he's dead.
Yep. That was also very – that's one of the most memorable parts of that movie, by the way. So I was actually trying to solicit listener questions because I know – I feel like everyone I know has seen this movie, right?
Yeah.
But no one has seen this movie in, you know, 10 or 20 years, which baffles me because I adore this movie. But so I'm asking people and they're like, that's the one with the eye patch scene, right? I'm like, yeah. Like, do you have any funny questions about that movie? And they're like, I haven't seen that movie since I was a kid.
Did you like that? I love this movie as a kid because there was just a lack of movies like this. I remember I watched this movie, right? And I was in a shop class. And these two guys and I would sit around looking at awesome boats after this movie. Like, we just loved the VHS of Captain Ron. And then we would talk about boats in shop class. Like, I wanted to go on a boating adventure because of this movie.
As a kid, I just liked this movie, but a lot of it's probably going over my head, even as a late teenager.
Yeah.
In college, though, like in undergrad, when most of my movie watching was with beer, I started to get more of the adult humor, and I liked it more. And now that I'm an adult, like, we're older than Martin, probably.
Yeah.
Well, not older. I'm sorry. He has a 16-year-old daughter. We're probably his age, or he's a little older than us. He's like 35, 40 range, right? I'm guessing in this.
Yeah.
So, but that said, like, we're like that age. We're, you know, we're well into mortgages, things like that. All these things that we catch that no kid is going to understand even if they catch it. You know, so it's like I started to appreciate all this stuff so much more. Like when you're 18 and Ron is staring at Kitty's cleavage, you're like, oh, scandalous. He's going to try and get it. You get older, it's like, no, he's just one of those guys. He's not really going to try anything. He's harmless, but he's going to flirt with her a lot because that's what he does.
Yeah. But and the filming, he wasn't recording. I don't think he wasn't going up there to record that. He just kind of saw it and was like, hey, this is all right.
And he's like, I'm not going to call him lecherous, but it's somewhere between lecherous and normal where he falls.
That's crazy that word came to my head. I'm like, that's a bit lecherous. Why did you and I think the same word, John?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, you got a camcorder aimed at your wife's butt. That's what you'd think, you know? Yeah.
you
assume the worst if you see that.
If I was Martin Short, I'd be a little annoyed. I got two questions for you from Tom, who joined us on the Live Free or Die Hard and Hackers Pod, an upcoming Real Genius. And he asks, why is his name Ron? And is it Ron or Ronald? What do you think? Do you think it's a Ronald? Do you think it's even Ron? Let's start with that.
It may be Ron, but Ron Rico is too ironic a name for someone who neither looks in any way Hispanic nor wealthy.
Yeah, so
he's the antithesis of Rico. So I think that part's made up, and maybe he really is a Ronald or something, and he put up this alias. He was avoiding the statute of limitations, and we know that he's sleeping with other people's wives. He's owed some pirates money. He's the kind of guy who probably doesn't want his real name floating around.
Do you think his name could be Aaron, and he just shortened it to Ron?
I could totally buy him as an Aaron.
Because, yeah, Aaron, I think that works really well. Maybe he was in the Navy. He was Aaron something. And he just kind of got led astray through years of partying it up in the, you know, in the Pacific and all the docks. And then he got out of the military, didn't know what to do, so he became a captain.
And, you know, it doesn't sound nice to say, but I do not think that if he was in the Navy that he got an honorable discharge.
No.
I think that he got caught with, like, does the Navy have ensigns? I was going to say, like, some ensign's wife. Is that a high or a low rank? I don't even know these things.
And maybe I feel like he smuggled fireworks or something. That's what he got booted for. Nothing major. You know, like, right. He like did a fireworks show for everybody on top of an aircraft carrier.
Or he cheeched his commanding officer's quarters while he was asleep because he's always grumpy and he thought it would put him in a better mood and make him happier.
Yeah.
So, like, they fill the vents with, like, pot smoke or something.
Yeah.
And he's just, but he's not thinking of it as a practical joke. He's like, man, he always seems to be in a bad mood. This would probably make him actually happier. And then, you know, it just blows up in his face, and they're like, yeah, you just drugged your commanding officer, Ron. You're out and prison time.
And Ron did not think about the first – he just thought it would be funny, not that, oh, man, I'm going to be drugging my commanding officer.
Right, right, exactly. Well, I don't even think he thought it was funny. I think he thought he was helping.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh,
in
yeah,
this hypothetical scenario, I think he thought he was helping.
Just an earnest guy.
Right, right. Yeah. I don't think there's anything – dodgy about him except for his history. I don't know how to say this. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And then,
He's not hurtful.
No, never. Like, even that scene where Martin Short's like, she's talking to me, Ron. Ron wasn't even trying to, when Martin Short said that woman Clarice was looking at him, and Kurt Russell's like, what? Clarice? Who are you looking at? Like, he was genuinely curious to know who Clarice was looking at. He wasn't doing that to prove a point. Like, he could have been like, no.
Yeah, he wasn't being a jerk.
Yeah, no, Martin, she's with me. Like, he's like, is Clarice looking at Martin? And then also another question is from Tom. Is he really a captain? Where's the proof? I think
he's a captain because he was hired to send them.
Yep.
To take the boat up.
Obviously, he's a local guy that people know because he got the call.
He's the lowest common denomination of captain in the sense that he has a license to operate that scale boat, and he works for a yacht broker in Miami.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, so that's – all right, good, good. I think that's the proof is because he got the call for it.
Right, but like, but captain – I mean, what is a captain? A captain is someone who has the license – who just claims responsibility for the ship.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's a captain. He's not a captain in, say, the military, Air Force,
he's not,
Navy.
He's not like Blackbeard, but...
Yeah. Jack Sparrow, yeah. That's funny. So, all right. So, we've covered a lot of ground, and we're not even to when he orders his first margarita, John.
Oh, gosh. Or when he gets Ben his first beer.
Oh, I love that. I think... Growing up, right, I just love him hanging out with the kid. And I love when he's like, you know, don't touch my beer. He's like, if you want one, get it yourself. And then he lets the kid drink a beer, and then he charges him $2.50 for it.
Right.
I love that scene.
Hey, get your hands off that. Keep your hands off my brewski. Oh, sorry, I was just moving. It's like, damn, you bet your booty you were. You want a beer, you get your own. And the kid just and then Ben, for the first time in the movie, gives him this look, that wide-eyed, like, oh face, like, what? And he's just, like, frozen. He has that face, like, in 10 different scenes in the movie when he's watching what's going down with Captain Ron, that what look, you know, like, it's so cute.
I did see a little bit of malice in Ron's face when he comes up, and the kid's trying to cheat. And he looks at him and goes, you wouldn't be trying to cheat Captain Ron, would you? Like, there's a little bit of malice. He's angry, I believe, in this scene.
But anyone being cheated.
Yeah, you're right.
Be upset about being cheated.
He goes full uncle on him right then and there.
Yeah.
He leaves Captain Ron and he becomes Uncle Ron.
Right. he is kind of like that uncle too.
Yeah.
It's the uncle that like you say that you don't trust to watch the kids and you never do let him watch the kids, but the reality is that you would trust him with the kids in the most serious situation. It's a joke and there are people who, you know, won't let him eat whatever they want or watch whatever they want. And he is that guy.
Yeah.
And give him beer, apparently.
I love that scene, though. He's like, what were they doing down there? He's like, they're playing hide the salami in the shower. And then the kid spits. He goes, oh, come on, man. Oh, come on, man. He's me. Oh, man. Oh, gosh. I don't know. Kurt Russell nails this role. He's... I like that Martin Short's a straight man and he's the comedy. You don't really get that in any other Kurt Russell movies, maybe Jack Burton. But for the most part, he hasn't played too many comedic characters, and I think he kind of nails this one.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it's funny, though, too. It's like he does so well, it almost seems like he isn't trying at all. Like, it's almost like, just be yourself, Kurt.
Someone wrote a good line, though. They say that in this movie, that he kind of walks around like he has a beer belly. You kind of watch him. He walks the way he kind of walks around. He seems to be carrying extra weight on him a little bit. Just kind of like I think he's making decisions in this movie.
Right. Doing that kind of slouchy. Well, not slouching forward, but overarching your back to push your stomach forward.
Yeah. He's kind of doing that. He's kind of walking around like so. Also, the guy wrote, I think he's the only person that could pull off a Rasta hat and that hair, like you never question. So you know how many other actors could do that, and you just be like, "What are they doing?" I've never thought twice about his hair in this movie until I read that line, and then I went, "Oh yeah." I was like, "I never even thought about that."
No, that's a fair point, and I'm in the same boat with you on that.
I mean, he looks like you. Have you ever thought like, man, what's going on with that hair?
Well, part of it is again that he plays this character so flawlessly. You know it. If he was just a little off or if anything was a little overdone, like the Farva guy in Club Dread, and I love that movie, by the way, but I'm just saying, it's like, you know, there's no reason for you to raise a brow. You're not going to be like, look at the Farva guy with this hair.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, you love the movie and you love the character,
yeah.
But it strikes you as ridiculous. With Ron, you don't even think about it because so much other stuff about Ron is ridiculous that that's the normal thing, is this white guy overly tanned with an eye patch and dreadlocks and or braids in his hair or whatever and the Rasta hat. Like, that's the normal thing about him.
I'm thinking about Bill Paxton in Club Dread too, with his long hair. I never thought twice about that.
Yeah, he nails that.
He just got the long hair. I never thought, hey, there's Bill Paxton with long hair. I just thought, hey, there's Coconut Pete. I don't even look at Bill Paxton. I don't say Bill Paxton's good in that movie. I just talk about I love Coconut Pete.
He's the only guy who could pull off the line, son of a bitch.
mother. And so there's Coconut Pete. And then we're just talking about Captain Ron. We're not, I keep saying Martin Short, but I don't say Kurt Russell. I'm like, yeah, Captain Ron is doing this.
That's interesting, by the way, the Martin is played by Martin Short. A lot of time, well, not a lot. Every now and then I notice that in a movie where someone is playing a character of their own name. And now, so a lot, like, I see it in indie movies, but I think that just keeps things easy. I think they did that even in, did they do that in The Endless? I think they did that one of the
movies. I think so, yeah.
And maybe that just keeps things easy. But like, in a movie like this, are they doing that to keep things easy, or was that just a coincidence? I mean, in filmmaking, is that a faux pas, or is that a convenience
now,
when you do that?
I know this script, right, was originally supposed to be for Chevy Chase, and it was a harder kind of an R-y script. And it was like a powerboat and like all these different kind of things, and then it changed into this. And the script went through rewrites. So I wonder if they just said – I know Martin did he talked about how they did a lot of the writing on the set and improv a lot, so maybe it just was Martin. Because that'd be too much of a coincidence for it to be Martin in the script. Maybe they wrote it for Martin Short to be the straight man and Chevy Chase was going to be the lecherous captain, which would have been really bad. Kurt Russell was a better pick. maybe they wrote it for Martin to be the straight man. So I don't know. And also Ben is Benjamin Salisbury. So the son, his name is Ben as well.
God, that's interesting. You see, for a child actor, I can see a value to that, though. A child actor, by very definition, is probably less experienced because they are younger. So maybe it makes it easier for them to respond to things. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go. I don't know anything about filmmaking.
Now, I have a question. When they get to Ted's Island, was he really thinking about tying bricks to Ben's feet?
He had the duct tape on. It was duct tape.
He was going to duct tape bricks to his feet.
He already did. Like, he was done duct taping them. And then he was like, okay, Swab, here's what you're going to do. And it was only when Martin shows up in the background that he's like, you know what? Never mind, Swab, I'll take care of it. And he just leaves the kid with these bricks duct taped to his feet. So I think he had every intention of dropping him down there.
And we would have been totally fine.
Probably.
I don't think he would let Ben die.
I think he would probably have been fine. I'm not willing to afford Ron the everything will be fine nod.
Yeah, you're right. And then are they at Ted's Island right now? Are they at Ted's? Do they ever get to Ted's Island?
Going to the island just to the left of it.
What's the name of it?
Ted's. Did they make it to Ted's Island? Was that when they were on the way to the island that ended up having gorillas?
Oh, yeah, because that's where the one with the chili bongo. Wait, so who's going to this restaurant in the middle of nowhere that you have to get lost to go to without a dock?
Freedom fighters.
So freedom fighters come to this storefront and get bongo chili dogs and bacon burger sandwiches.
Now, we didn't learn a lot about this island. I don't know how big this island is. I'm guessing it's not big. But is there a resort on the other side of it? Is there a local town that, you know, takes up most of the employment of the resort? Is this a known spot where they do surf lessons for the resort? Like, and if you just go off the trails, or if you go deeper into the jungle, instead of saying near the perimeter of the island, that's when you get into the freedom fighter zone. Like, the more I talk, the less sense I make of this, actually.
How are they keeping this inventory with beans? I mean, probably frozen, but they didn't seem to have too much electricity out there to
they
run
a generator there, yeah. Wouldn't they?
And then, I mean, they have to keep this stuff frozen, right? Because they just can't, I mean, once it's fresh, you got to make it. So maybe they just bring fresh ingredients every day, and when it runs out, it runs out. Maybe they're that famous where it's like hipsters go there now. It's like it's a speakeasy, but for chili dogs. You just got to know the island to go get your bongo burger.
And I got to say, though, so we mentioned earlier, when he's dancing in this scene, I was watching that. That's one of those moments where, like, I was just like, man, it's like he's not necessarily dancing well. He's just really, really awesome at being in the moment with very basic dance moves. And I was just watching him like, man, if I could do that at a wedding, I'd be so smooth.
Well, there's just no self-consciousness at all to it. He's just having fun.
Yep.
And that, you know, me, I think I've probably danced well in my life for about 5 seconds. The rest of it I've been too self-conscious on. So he's reckless abandon with his dancing.
Yeah, but he was good, man. He was in it. He tries to dance with the daughter. She's not having it, so he dances with Kitty. She's like, yeah. I can't dance in these. She's like, kick him off.
Yeah, and then she goes, Martin and I used to dance, and you're like, they throw out a lot of these little lines.
He's like, oh, it shows.
But it's just the poor guy, like, he used to take me dancing, and they have all this. You're like, geez Louise, why'd they have to throw that in there?
Back before they had two mortgages, or maybe when they only had, maybe when they didn't have kids yet, and they had just moved into their first small condo, and they were just starting their jobs after college.
Yeah, then so 16 years ago they used to go dancing.
Maybe.
Ooh, I like it. Hey, how about this, man? Let's do something. Let's take a break. You and I, we're gonna watch YouTube, and then we're gonna do some practice dance moves. And when we come back, we'll share them on the podcast. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. And I got to tell you, John, your dance moves have really improved.
Yeah, but my home decor needs a lot of work now.
You snap. It was like Godzilla walking through the streets of Japan.
Just like Shrek did like a WWF wrestling move, like the whirlwind with his fists out.
I remember one time Megan was around and I busted out some dance moves. She's like, that was actually pretty good. And then I tried to recreate it and I just fell apart. I just got stressed. I couldn't do it.
There's no such, for me, there's no such thing as a deliberately done good dance move. It just doesn't exist.
This has got to happen. Now, let's talk about what we haven't jumped into this too much, but the classic gorillas and gorillas, gorillas and gorillas scenes.
So the same island where they were having the abandoned plane burgers when they were on their way to Ted's Island and took a wrong turn.
Yeah, and so it's a good bit. Like, that's a funny. I mean, he warns him, and then Martin Short is so his latitude of rejection towards Ron by now is so strong that he refuses to think, oh, freedom fighters.
Right. No, Captain Ron. Gorillas are native to equatorial Africa.
Yeah. And I got to tell you, the relationship that they form with these gorillas, it's kind of nice. They're on the boat. They're hanging out. They play Monopoly together. I mean, Kitty's hanging all of her clothes out, and the guys don't even seem to mind. They're not being lecherous towards her. They're a mm-hmm. little annoyed that they were 20 miles off the beaten path. But for the most part, they're pretty chill freedom fighters.
Dude, the kid is hustling their, what is, not general, but their, was it general, colonel?
Yeah, the general.
Yeah, so the kid is hustling him playing cash Monopoly.
And I think
that was pretty cute.
The guy owes him like $16 or $32. He's like, that's all the money my general has. And the kid's like, you know, tough shit, pay up.
And then the general looks at the guy who was translating, like what'd he say?
And the guy just doesn't want to do it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either.
But they bonded. I mean, if you're going to pick up freedom fighters on an island, these are probably the best freedom fighters you probably could have picked up. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, they were absolutely true to their word. They seemed respectful. And even when they were all crowding around Ron, he's like, come on, guys, you know, come on, a little space. Like, he's just trying to navigate. And they're just like, oh, sorry.
And they're kind of part of the family towards the end, where, like, when they're stuck in the massive storm and they do my least favorite bit in here is like, oh, we're fine as long as we have these charts. And then the charts blows away and they're all trying to grab it. We're fine as long as we have this compass. The compass blows away. They're trying to grab it. They became like a big family.
That scene, though, and that was actually maybe my – even though it's funny, it's probably my least favorite scene. Although from that, we do get the fuel line, you know, the line about the running out of fuel. But, like, the way that was all staged and how it looked with the water, like, I felt like I was watching an 80s sitcom and there was an episode where there was a scene of them on a boat.
Yeah, I don't think that was in the original script. I just thought we need to come up with something. And so they just shot that really fast.
But that was the most crudely crafted scene in the whole film.
I don't believe that Ron would lose that chart. That goes against everything of his character. At least I believe. Like, I don't think he would lose that thing. Do you think Ron would take it out in that storm? Because they didn't really need it.
Right. That doesn't seem to make sense. It does make sense when he was so careless that he left it uncovered and it blew over the candle and it caught on fire. That I got.
Yeah, because he was.
But I agree with you about the wind.
I mean, that you don't really think about that. Like that, he wasn't thinking about the placement of the candles on that. It just kind of happened when he was there. It's funny. That's my least favorite bit in this.
I've been on a road trip, and when there is like a 5-mile-an-hour breeze, I get in the car instinctively before I even pull out the map.
Yeah.
So like, if he's out there in that with these like, I don't know, 30-mile-an-hour winds and rain. There's rain. Why would you even pull out the thing in the rain? It was like a fold-up map of the eastern United States. Like, it's
and then
just
a
paper.
Very strong gust of wind takes the compass away. It blows it in a straight line.
I'm surprised they didn't lose one of their kids.
Did the power sander hit it?
I'm surprised they didn't lose Martin.
Yeah. And
just taps it and it
flies away, oh, brother. But then I do listen. I guess if the payoff for that is we ran out of gas, so we must be close.
That was a great line.
I guess it's worth it because once again, like the parking scene with the Saratoga line, this shows he knows what the deal is.
Yeah.
Jeez, wait. I thought he was a pretty good teacher as well. I mean, they learned everything they needed to know about Bo, and he was a stern teacher. Remember he got angry at him when they first picked up the gorillas when they were leaving that? And they jumped in and told him how to do the job.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't putting out, he was annoyed. Ron was like, come on, guys. You're making me look. Did he say you're making me look bad in front of the freedom fighters?
Right. Yeah, he did say something like that.
Would you? Oh, man. So it's like, do you think he knows what he's doing? Do you think he's kind of like a guardian angel type guy where he comes in and makes their life better and everyone just sort of thinks, oh, hey, maybe he's like, okay, we had a theory about Pauly Shore and Encino Man, which is a podcast that has been released, where Pauly Shore and Encino Man, he just gets someone different every year. So like Steve Cruiser, Sean Astin, and he makes them better. And then he brings them into his engineering school. And then he finds another project that makes them better by playing the Weasel character. Do you think Captain Ron does that?
I don't think Ron does that.
Oh, okay.
And I wouldn't like that because when Pauly Shore does it, he doesn't do it through necessarily acting like something he isn't. If Ron is doing it, he's doing it by acting disingenuously.
Oh, so he's because
if Ron was doing it, it would have meant that almost all of his personality was a ruse.
Oh yeah, that'd be bad. Never mind. Ditch that idea.
But you brought up like his teaching, and it's funny. I don't think that he's a good teacher. I think that he's just so relatable that people pick up what he's saying. When he gives, because it really was kind of interesting how at first in the movie when he's like, you know, giving some little quizzes about what's this, what's that, he pops out of the cabin. He's like, hey, kitty, what's that you're holding right there? And she says, I don't know, like mizzen shaft or something. He's like, ha, good job, you know, like. But it seems so trivially random that it couldn't possibly matter. And then later in the film, he's walking the family around and he's pointing, like he's touching it, and then they're all saying together what it is. But it's like, that may not have a good practical use, but then later when he gets them all doing something together, they're not doing it seamlessly. It's not like this magical transformation, but they're getting through it and they're smiling because they're doing something they've never done before. You know, it's like when you're holding the back of a kid's bicycle seat while he's trying to ride without training wheels for the first time. You're really keeping him up, but he is doing a lot of it. And it was very gratifying. And even when he had to be like, no, guys, hold on. And he came in and he's like, no, you're doing this all wrong. And then you think he's fixing it. But then he's like, okay, yeah, that's right. Now guide it up. And then he lets them do it again. And it all felt really good. Like that felt so – it felt very real to me. It felt very warm to me when they were getting those sails up. Even though he had to help them a lot, it's like, well, it's not like the first time we see him do it, they're going to kick ass at it.
Yeah. I guess they did good enough, and then he jumped in there and helped him out.
But yeah, just in the way that they were like, you know, the way they look at each other, you know, like when he corrects them, they're a little frazzled in the moment. But as they're doing it, they're kind of, you know, it's that half smile of like, yeah, I'm doing this. Like, I don't know. It felt really good. That for me was like one of the happiest, warm, fuzzy moments of the whole film. It really sticks with me.
So we have the happiest Warren moment, and then I want to talk about the weirdest moment when they arrive for Carnival, and right. Martin and Kitty show up on the boat, and on this boat is a Speedo-wearing Ron, a shirtless bird eagle-tattooed, fake-tattooed the kid, Ben with an eye patch and a beer. And then there is a woman, you know, a prostitute on the boat that – remember, she's not a Cretan boss. She's Puerto Rican. And then so what was Ron's thought process to have it get down to what they're doing here?
I suspect that he brought a prostitute knowingly to the boat. And I think that when the kids ended up he had them all come back to the boat for a reason, for kind of safety. But I think that he was skipping off, and maybe, you know, Ben saw him and he's like, oh, you know, well, I don't want to leave Ben unattended or something, or I don't want to let him feel unincluded. So then it just turned into, well, let's play Monopoly. And then it turned into strip Monopoly.
Yeah, because they ran out of money. And she was working a system, boss. I was going to figure her out.
That is funny, though. So he's paying for her time either way. But then apparently when she's up in strip Monopoly, they have to pay her what she's hustling out of them. And apparently that was the point of contention, not the money that he owed in general for getting a prostitute.
Yeah, it was $500, right, that they owed?
Dude, like that just seems like dangerous water altogether, though. You're playing with an outsider.
Yeah.
Well, he knew her, though.
I do love this line, though. When he comes on the boat and he says a Cretan, she's Puerto Rican, but she goes, who is this guy? I don't like him a lot.
That's right. I don't like him a lot.
I like that line. And then I'm not going to pay. And then they get their boat robbed because then they fired Ron.
And she's like, and she's just whispering to that goon. Like, yeah. It's so forecast that something bad is going to happen.
Wait, maybe they were scouting the boat and they sent her there and Ron's just a nice guy. No, Ron likes to have some fun. Clarice, her. So I'm not going to say he's a total innocent in all of this. But they could have been scouting the boat, the pirates.
They could have. Well, I think he was soliciting a prostitute, and maybe he just solicited the wrong prostitute, and she just let him know.
I love these Touchstone movies that Disney made back in the day.
This was a Disney movie?
Yeah, well, Touchstone, that's like a branch of theirs. So type in Touchstone Wikipedia, and you'll just see a lot of their movies in the 90s that were like this.
This has nudity in it.
Yeah.
It's very brief, but like you see the Mary Kay.
Yep. Place.
What's her name's like I actually stopped and rewound it twice because I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't see nudity. And so I rewound, but I wasn't rewinding it to see nudity. I was rewinding it to confirm that there clearly wasn't, because this movie can't have nudity. I've seen this movie like 20 times. I have no recollection of nudity. And then I'm like, wait a minute. Was that, now I'm watching on a 75 inch TV. I'm like, that's a nipple. Yep. And then I rewind it. I'm like, I just saw that nipple three times, very briefly each time, right? But I did. I just saw that nipple three times. I see nudity in this movie, and I was shocked.
I would be annoyed, I think, if I was a parent going to watch a Touchstone movie that was obviously advertised as a family-friendly movie. And we're going to get our PG-13 rating here, but there's a line where Kurt Russell goes, we're going to fucking die. And then you're always saying, tough shit, there's nudity in it, there's... I mean, like, you know, there's sexual things. There's a bunch of situations like that. So, I mean, this is a very weird hybrid family slash not family movie, right?
Well, and he's even saying, you know, I come here every now and then. She wants my manhood, boss. There's a hooker in the cabin hustling their son out of Monopoly money. Like, it's a lot of weird. They don't outwardly say all this stuff. But a lot of weird stuff is happening. The parents went to jail.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Because they were
pirates shooting at their boat. And the daughter is holding the little boy's head down to make sure he doesn't get shot.
Yeah, the pirates are unloading automatic weapons on them.
That was a serious... That was a like a turret gun thing, man. That was serious.
And those bolts don't really do much damage.
No, they don't. I was surprised that didn't become an issue when they're talking about like selling the boat, or at the end they're like, oh, maybe we don't sell the boat. I'm like, well, you got like 60 bullet holes in it, so I don't think it'll sell well.
So I know that Ron, at the end, he pretends to break his leg so that the family can work together as a team and save the day. But if the Coast Guard hadn't come, they all would have died. So was Ron right in letting them do that? Or are there times and places for letting a family become close again when they might very well die?
I think that in the moment he was lying because he was a coward.
Oh, you think so?
I do. In the moment, I think he was being a coward, because if he was really doing it on purpose, no matter what, that's going to come out. Like, you... No matter what, that's going to come out at some point. You're going to be on that boat for like another 2 days.
So you think Ron did that, acted helpless because he was afraid?
I think he was scared, and he was in a real dire situation. I think he wanted to stay safe. And then once they were gone and he had a moment, I think that's when he's like, well, shit, now I'm going to do everything I can to call for help and you know, do my part to try and save us.
Well, this is controversial.
It felt to me like he was being a coward.
See, I thought he was just saying, I'm going to let the family do this on their own, so then they won't need me anymore.
That seems like a really big risk in this situation.
Yeah, that's why I was, yeah. So I just can't think of old Ron as a chicken.
See, it's not that I think that you're wrong.
Well, it's opinion,
when,
right?
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, when I watched it, like, it was never even a thought. Like, it just felt like he was being a coward.
That's funny. You and I had completely different reactions to this scene. Yeah, but we both thought he was lecherous.
It converged to the same thought process later in the scene, but in the beginning, yeah, I was reacting very differently.
Interesting. All right, so, hey, we have some questions. Do you want to tackle these questions while we're talking about Ron?
Let's see what we got.
All right, so Megan asks, if they remade Captain Ron, who should star in it, or should it just be Russell again? Yes, it should be Kurt Russell again. He should be still captaining boats, which is totally fine. I mean, you can be a captain on that. But right? You can't bring in another. I think Chris Pine. Could Chris Pine be a good Captain Ron?
Wow, that's an interesting choice. I kind of like where you're going with it, though.
I think Chris Pine could do it. The only person that comes in my brain right now that I think would be really funny is Chris Pine as a Captain Ron.
Oh, my God. You know who I could see doing it because of acting chops, even though he doesn't do these kind of roles much? Why can't I think of his name?
Michael Venom. Shannon? Tom Hardy as Captain Ron?
No joke.
Oh, my gosh. So I would love Chris Pine, Tom Hardy, or Michael Shannon. I think Kevin Hart would be a good Martin Short, just as like a straight character.
Yep, I like that, and especially for little freakouts. He just can't go full Kevin Hart, because then it turns into a Kevin Hart freaking out movie. He has to like only go like 60% Kevin Hart.
Kind of what he does in Central Intelligence with The Rock.
Yeah, more like that. Yeah. Let The Rock carry most of the humor.
I mean, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if The Rock could be a good Captain Ron, but I think I want Chris Pine or Tom Hardy.
I like those picks.
All right, that's fun. That's a really good one.
I like those picks, but I'd be upset if they were remaking it.
Oh, yeah, they shouldn't do it. I mean, they're not going to do it anyway, but...
I wasn't upset when I heard they were going to be, whether it's remaking or continuing, but, you know, essentially remaking Big Trouble in Little China. That didn't upset me. I just knew I couldn't love it as much as the original. Like, I was bothered, but I'm still interested to see what they do. Whereas Captain Ron, like, I can't even imagine. It's not even like, who are you going to have do it? It's like, no one else can do it in my head almost.
Yeah. No one. I don't know. He nailed the character. They don't really need to do it again.
I feel like also now with bigger budgets, like they would probably overdo certain things like the pirate assault on the ship. And it would be too much for what they're going for. I don't know. Then again, I liked what they did with Baywatch. If the guys behind the Baywatch movie were doing it, I'd be more on board.
Let's do it. Bring it in.
I'm the guy. I know a lot of people aren't fond of it, but I love the Baywatch movie. I love it. But I used to watch the show a lot. And that movie is four people to laugh at because they know the show.
Got it.
In my opinion.
Well, I mean, if this cast happens, I'd watch it.
I mean, if we're doing the casting, I'm going to like it more.
Well, here's the news. The good thing is I think more people would get eyes on Captain Ron if they remade it. People would be like, what's Captain Ron? And then more people would watch it. But
get the cult status it deserves.
That's right. Another question from Chris is, he wrote, can we get a sequel, please? Now, you and I don't have the power, John. So if we do recommend it and we do get associate producer credits, what could the sequel be?
I mean, there's what it would probably be that it shouldn't be, and then there's what I'd like it to be. And what I'd like it to be is something that I still wouldn't think was awesome. But it's just like, here we are later, it's the next adventure of Captain Ron.
And he's 27 years down the line, so we don't want him to be the same character. Maybe he has a family? And
the difficulty I have with it is that Kurt Russell has such a bias towards serious roles in this part of his life. I mean, even Mr. Nobody is someone who puts people in dire situations.
Yeah.
Like, whereas back then he had Tango and Cash, he had, you know, he had Jack Burton, he had Overboard and Used Cars. Like back then, leading up to then, he had done a lot of these roles where it fit. Whereas the last 15 years, he hasn't done much ha-ha stuff. I feel like it would be challenging to today's audiences to see Kurt Russell reprise the role, even though it wouldn't be challenging for us to see it.
Maybe he has a family and he's kind of given up being a captain, and then Chris Pine shows up as Captain Hank. I don't know. I can't think of a sequel. But yeah, I mean, I'd be down. Now, we have two random questions here for you, John.
Okay.
All right. So I'd like a count on how many times I'd like a count on how many times the eye patch changes eyes. And this is from David Cross. So how many times? I think the eye patch only crosses once, and that's when he's
correct.
Sleeping.
And when he asked this question before I rewatched the movie, I was like, oh my God, that's a great question. And then as I'm watching, it really was just when he napped.
Yeah, I was kind of I for some reason thought it happened a lot more. But
yeah, you know, it's funny. If you really think about it, though, if it swapped more, it would have given it more of a hot shots level yeah. of humor.
Yeah.
And that would have been a little too much, I think. I think what they did was perfect. And this comes down to it. What I said about people when I was asking for questions, that's like the scene that everyone remembers.
They think he's dead.
And like people are making the eye patch like into, they're giving it its own its own mythology and its own backstory almost. When really it just switched for that one scene.
And he got the eye in a craps game, which Rocket Raccoon would be very jealous of.
Oh, he got the eye in a craps game.
Yeah, he won it in the craps game. It's like Pirates. That guy has the eye that doesn't fit.
Remember how I said he said how he lost his eye in two different ways?
Yeah.
I thought he said, lost that eye in a bad craps game.
He got it. I got it.
I misheard it.
Yeah, he won it in the craps game.
That was what I couldn't think of earlier, but I thought I assumed that he, you know, was down and someone, you know, pulled out a knife.
This is the second part of David's question. He asks, also, how many times has Kurt played a captain? So I went through his back catalog, and so he played a Captain Ives in Interstate 60. He has a small cameo in there, and then he's Captain Ron in this movie. So he's played he was also another captain in Captain Dennis McCaffrey. He plays two different characters in Backdraft. So three times in Backdraft, Interstate 60, and Captain Ron, he has been a captain.
Oh, so captain, the title, not captain as in Marine captain.
I guess any captain. I just sort of, like, if captain is before his name, I took it.
I got just, you. And I'll ran with that. It. I'd take that, though. Backdraft, I wouldn't have thought of that, but that makes sense.
Yeah, he played two characters. And then he put, even stranger, what is the organizational chart of all the military characters he's played? John, do you mind if I break this down real quick?
You go ahead, because I didn't know how to approach all that. Right.
So, and I kind of did them in order of rank. And there's firefighters, there's police, there's old-timey, there's army. Like, they're all different, but I kind of did it by rank. So, in Dark Blue, he plays Sergeant Eldon Perry. Then in Tango and Cash, he plays Lieutenant Gabriel Cash. In Backdraft, he's Captain Dennis McCaffrey. In Interstate 60, he's Captain Ives. In Bone Tomahawk, he is Sheriff Hunt. Mm. In Tombstone, he becomes a U.S. Marshal, which is federal, so he's in that. And then in Stargate, he's Colonel Jack O'Neill. Then we move on to the Fast movies, where he's Mr. Nobody, who is a very high-ranking officer. I mean, he is so high-ranking, the government travels around kegs of Belgian beer, and helicopters come for him at any moment's notice.
He's delivering millions of dollars of automatic weapons probably to Nicaragua or Russia or whoever he wants trying to kill someone else.
Yeah, so he's very high ranking. Then we have, get this, the commander in Sky High, right? He is the commander of the superhero family. Then
I forgot that movie existed.
In the Christmas Chronicles... He's very proud of Sky High, by the way. Every time people are like, hey, Captain Ron's a... I've read so many interviews. Right? Captain Ron is a cult classic. He skips it completely. He goes, I like that movie because I met Martin Short and we're really great friends now. He's like, but you should watch Sky High. That's the movie I want more people to watch. So he he doesn't talk about Captain Ron all that much. And then he plays Santa Claus in the Christmas Chronicles. I mean, he's old Saint Nick. He's everywhere. He can fly. He can freeze time. Super powerful being. And then Guardians of the Galaxy 2, he plays a planet, a god, Ego. So I did the chart.
Dude, Santa Claus is the commander-in-chief of a continent.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. So who's more powerful, Ego or probably Ego over Santa, right?
Probably. Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
I actually had a very fun time putting together this chart. So thank you, David. That was really fun. And then another question that we have is right here, and this is from Lacey, and she asks, how many movies has water served as a significant feature in the film? Which ones has he appeared in?
You mean Kurt Russell films?
Yeah, Kurt Russell films has water played. So do you want to get us started with any of this, John?
I mean, I think of the remake of the Poseidon Adventure, Poseidon, that had some heavy scenes where water's the big deal. Kurt Russell's character drowns.
Yeah, that's bad news.
That was a tough scene to watch, by the way. Yeah. Wow.
Don't kill. Why would you knock out Kurt Russell? And then I guess to go with that, we have Deepwater Horizon about the oil fire, the oil rig fire on the Gulf.
That, and, so, and, And water plays a big factor. I'm going to let you talk about them, but it plays a big factor in both Escape from New York and Escape from L.A.
Yep, because Escape from L.A., he surfs, right? And he takes the water. Wait, which one does he surf in? He surfs in
LA.
Escape from... Yeah, L.A. He surfs in L.A., and then he also takes the submarine there.
Yeah, it looks like the Batwing version of a submarine almost.
And then Escape from New York, doesn't he surf in?
I don't remember him surfing in that, but I haven't seen that in a long time.
I love Escape from L.A., dude. That surfing, holy crap. What a great scene.
You love that surfing.
Yeah, I love that surfing. He and Fond are high-fiving each other while surfing in a drainage ditch. Then we have Captain Ron, of course. Lots of water. Overboard, right? Because she falls overboard
right
on the yacht. Now, I have some that are out there, John, but I just want you to roll with me, all right?
All right, let's hear it.
Backdraft. He's a firefighter. What do they fight fire with?
Okay, fine water.
Yep. All right, Miracle. They play hockey. What do they play hockey on top of?
On the ice, right?
And that's okay. frozen water,
frozen
right?
water for right? the listeners, yes.
Now, The Thing. Where does that take place?
Antarctica, which is a bunch of frozen water. I'm not going to say you're wrong. They even found it. They found The Thing in a block of ice.
That's right. He could, you know, take some of the ice, put it in his scotch, or he could just dump it in his computer. And then The Hateful Eight. That takes place in a snowed-in cabin.
Right.
So another more frozen water. Why is all the water frozen? The happening too. So, I mean, a lot of his movies have played around water. What do you think?
I feel like most of those are on point. Hateful Eight. I feel like you're reaching. I appreciate the reach, though. That was a fun movie, and I liked his character a lot at that.
And then Santa Claus lives in the North Pole.
Right.
Right? Where there's a lot of water that's frozen.
Right.
What do you think?
Sure.
Now,
sure.
He does have some anti-water movies, and that is Bone
Stargate.
Tomahawk, Stargate, and Tombstone. Anti-water movies.
Soldier was a pretty, mostly pretty arid areas too, wasn't it?
Well, he gets rained on in Soldier. Remember? They get the wet Kurt Russell rain scene.
That's right.
So, I did a lot of work here. And then Tequila Sunrise, there's a scene on the beach, in the water, in the ocean.
Wait, there's another movie I forgot almost totally that existed.
This was fun, man. I like went through all his movies and I love that I made you tell me what ice was. Well, it's frozen.
More than once.
It's frozen water.
It's like, what are they, Miracle, what do they play on? The ice, and what's that, John? Yes, for the listeners, it's frozen water. It's like David Letterman's, not co-host, but like the band guy, where, you know, sometimes he just gets roped into his jokes at the opening.
Yeah, David, yeah. So, I mean, hey, we nailed it, right? We answered these questions pretty well.
I think wasn't there another question?
Oh, do we have another one?
There was the question about Snake and Ron.
Oh, yeah.
Drinking...
Oh, yeah. So who would win in a, this was from Chris Kelly, right? So Chris Kelly asked, who would win in a drinking contest? Would it be Snake and Ron against Simon Pegg and Nick Frost from Shaun of the Dead?
Now, I'll bet the popular gut response from people is the Kurt Russell characters. But honestly, they are incidental drinkers.
Yeah.
I think that Ron is drinking super light beer.
Super light.
Like one beer every couple hours. And like he's not drinking to get drunk. He's just casually, it's like when you're at the beach all day.
We never see Ron drunk.
Right, but I don't even think, you never see a bunch of empty beer bottles around, really. He just strikes me as someone who's casually getting through. He doesn't flip it upside down like Dom DeRetto for 30 seconds. You know, like, he's just casually sipping a beer. Like, whereas, the guys from...
Well, they're in the pub every day, right?
Yeah, and they talk about it. It's a big problem with the girlfriend. It's, you know, like we see them hammered a lot. Like they are serious drinkers. And I don't think they're drinking slowly either. I think they're taking panic gulps when they first get there after a day of work. And then when they're about to close, I'll bet they order two pints and take them down in 15 minutes.
Whoa.
Like, they are not big guys. Well, actually, Nick Frost kind of is. But like in general, they're not like big hulking guys, but they are drinkers.
So you have incidental drinkers, because both, I mean, Snake Plissken's in good shape too. Neither, like, he stays after, you know, he probably has some drinks, but he has to keep, you know, he's a gunfighter, he probably has to keep his head straight, and Ron just likes to have the occasional cerveza.
But, I mean, I'll bet that if you were to put a check mark every hour of the day that Snake or Ron have a beer, it would be more hours of more days of more weeks of more years. They drank in more hours of their life than Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. However, Nick Frost and Simon Pegg are drinking at least the same number of beers in a few hours.
Yeah. Yeah, they're knocking back either what? They're probably getting a lager or just a nice, I don't know. I don't see them doing cask ales, do you? They're probably just doing a lager.
But they're not drinking Corona Lights either.
Yeah. I mean, they're probably getting like I know it's a completely different area, but in Ireland, when I was out there, the favorite beer was Carlsberg. Everyone just loved that lager. So they're probably getting something like equivalent.
That's like a 4.8, yeah. 5, right? Yeah, but you know, it's like a Budweiser.
Yeah. So they're just knocking back some nice draft lagers at their local. But I like what you said. As soon as they show up, they're getting two and knocking one back fast.
Dude, really? I think about us in college hitting a bar. Like, in the first hour, we, ignoring the notion of shots, I'll bet in the first hour you drink like 3 or 4 beers. Like, I just got here. Oh, I got to catch up, or, yeah, you know, yep, just whatever. Or the first one, you just chug it for the sake of chugging it. You order 2 beers, and then the second one is your sipper. Every single time someone is ordering a beer and you're like halfway, you're like, well, by the time they get here, I'll be a little lower than, I may as well just chug this and order a beer. Like, it's just, that's their mentality, I'll bet. And Kurt Russell, if he finishes his beer, his first thought isn't, I got to get another beer. Like, that's not Ron's thought. It's whenever he goes to that side of the boat again, he might think, oh, yeah, beer. You know, and pick up a, yeah, I have a beer. Whereas those guys, they need another beer before they finish this beer, so they don't have any moment without beer.
I love it. That's perfect. When they're looking at the jukebox beer, when they come home from that, you know, they probably stop by the convenience store, get a 4-pack. I love it. All right, last question. Who's a better surfer, Snake or Captain Ron?
I don't know if Ron is telling a fish story about his surfing or not. We've seen Snake surf.
I mean, Snake surfs, a monsoon hits him, and he stays on the board. So it's got to be Snake.
And there's cement near him. If he wipes out, he could die.
And he steers his surfboard up on a ledge and then jumps into Steve Buscemi's car.
Like, he's doing some high-risk stuff very casually. Like, that, he is a master surfer. Ron mentions surfing once.
Yeah. Ron can get it done. But, yeah,
And to the tune of Ron mentioning stuff, most of the stuff he mentions involves failing.
Yeah, I tried that one. Also,
get out of the way. I learned that driving the Saratoga.
Yeah.
He mentions his boss's boat that he crashed into the Great Barrier Reef. Like, he messes things up a lot. So when he mentions surfing, I not imagine him being an ace at it.
Yeah. Yeah. Snake. I was trying to find I was just looking at my phone. I was trying to find a reference to the surfing again, but I couldn't find one. But yeah, I mean, what can we just talk about? Can we do a 2-hour podcast about that surfing scene, John?
You would. You've written an entire article about it, haven't you?
Yep. It's a good view getter. 5 Reasons Why Escape from LA is a Bonkers Masterpiece.
That's right.
I stand by it. So. We had some good questions. That was fun. So before we get gone out of here, man, do you have any plugs that you want to get done?
Oh, gosh. You know, just a lot of our regular supporters, like on Twitter, there's with 2 M's, Grim Horror is all over our material. Author John F. Leonard, who does Bad Pennies and a lot of other things that you can buy on Amazon. He's a horror writer. He's all over our podcast. The folks from The Fear Merchant and Crash Palace, John Wheedler, Johnny Numb, and Billy Crash, great supporters, and I love their podcast, The Last Knock. I think that about does it for me this week.
Well, yeah, no, and thank you for everyone who sent in questions. Also, quick reminder, y'all, we're on Spotify, so if you want to listen to our podcast there, make sure to do that. Make sure to favorite it. Also, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. This was fun. And so actually, pay attention to movies, films, and Facebook, Movies, Films, and Flicks, Facebook, we are going to put up, maybe in the next month, we're going to put up a poll for what should be our 200th episode, which will be another Kurt Russell movie. So pay attention to that. It'll be our pinned post on Facebook, and just make sure to come in and give us a vote, because, you know, Captain Ron won. So we got to get a movie to talk about for our 200th episode, which
and
is
that
another...
was how we got the Big Trouble in Little China too, isn't it?
Yeah, our 150th. So yeah. Every 25th episode we're doing a Kurt Russell movie. So we're gonna do Kurt Russell movies for every 25th episode until we run out of them. But yeah, we want to get your vote. So just make sure to follow Movies, Films, and Flicks Facebook. Well, thanks for joining me, John. This was fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Kurt Russell, I mean, how can you miss it?
Dude, you do a good Captain Ron. Give us a good sign us out with a good Captain Ron.
Well, folks, it's time to go. But just remember, if you ever get lost, just pull over somewhere and ask directions.